I should have fucking played the whole song, I guess.
Nah, that was cool.
Well, welcome everyone to another Paint It Black podcast special episode, spoilers edition, possibly, maybe, the last one of the summer.
Well, no, it's the last one of the summer, but I think we're going to continue the tradition.
Yeah. We could keep it up.
There's The Hobbit, Machete, there's a bunch of good
movies. We'll throw them in there. This is the last summer spoiler, yeah. We'll call it that.
And from now on, you might get a Kick-Ass 2 version.
From now on, every time we do one of these, I'm going to go, spoilers!
Spoilers!
Jazz hands.
Please, more jazz hands. It's lacking in my life. Tonight, myself, Pete Berg, my friends Brian Katz and Lou Figueroa.
Chewbacca's in the Millennium, let's do it.
Yarrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrr discussing The World's End, one of my favorite movies of the summer, and we will be spoiling the fuck out of this thing.
You know what it is? It's not the best comedy or the best action, but it's the second best action and second best comedy
movie. It combined, yes. Right? Like this. Well, let's start with this. Thoughts. Initial thoughts on The World's End?
I gotta say, man, it really brought a smile to my face. I love Nick Frost and I love Simon Pegg, and every time they get together and do an Edgar Wright movie, you know what you're expecting. It's gonna be great. The direction's gonna be fantastic with all the funny little quips they have.
I'll go so far as to say you get Simon Pegg and Nick Frost in most things, like movies like Paul. I fucking love Paul.
I didn't know Edgar Wright was not involved in that at first, but again, that was a great movie.
It's a great movie.
But the direction style, I feel, it's so them when they have all those little shortcuts and the little inside jokes they have.
When Edgar Wright directs a movie, it's not so much scene after scene, it's choreographed like a dance. Every joke is so perfectly put together. Every action sequence is set up just right. Like, the man's perfect at this.
You really gotta watch these things more than once to see everything.
I can't wait to watch this again.
Yeah. This is a movie that you'll watch the third or fourth time and still laugh at new stuff you haven't really even realized.
Shaun of the Dead came out 10 years ago. I still watch it every time I see it on TV.
And I gotta say, this is a movie that you'll watch and you'll be like, God damn, I want a good lager right now.
So we're all fans of the Cornetto trilogy, safe to say?
Oh yeah, I think this might be the best one.
Now, that was exactly what I was gonna ask. Where do you think this ranks?
Shaun of the Dead, I'm a huge zombie guy, and Hot Fuzz, I love action films. This is their sci-fi entry, I guess, into it.
Yeah, this is their alien invasion movie.
And I feel that this, from front to end, was their best one, I felt.
Really?
Yeah, I like it better than Hot Fuzz, or I especially like the fact that Simon Pegg and Nick Frost switch roles. That the first two was Nick Frost was Simon's goofy guy.
Simon Pegg's Gary King character was the reckless kind of loudmouth of the group, rather than Nick Frost.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you actually go back to Hot Fuzz, neither of them were playing that character.
Nick Frost was like the dullard.
And he was a dullard, but he was a sweet dullard.
But again, he was still like the comic relief, while Nick Frost was a straight-laced guy. Right. I'm sorry, Simon Pegg was a straight-laced guy.
What do you think, Lou?
Well, I definitely agree with all that. You know, initially, I saw the previews, and I'm like, oh, great. You know, this is just, you swap out zombies for robots, and they're still trying to reach the bar.
Can't deny that that did run through my head at one point.
But then watching the movie, they made so many changes to the dynamic of how they usually play out that it didn't occur to me while I'm watching the movie.
Right. And for myself, I should say that where this movie really impressed me was not just in the fact that it was hysterical and had great action. There was a point behind this movie. There was a statement made about growing up and about being mature, and holy shit, I was moved by it by the end.
There was so many great, like taken to heart scenes, I thought, where, like, I was getting a little emotional about it. I was like, I love the character of Gary because I saw myself a lot in him, but I just love the fact that he just, you know, he had such a hard time dealing with everything, and like he really displayed that a lot when he what like, especially at the end when he was talking to the lamp and
the
you know,
network. Yeah,
I loved how just how that all came to be at the end, and you saw him basically deal with his own decisions in life.
He's forced to face himself as a younger man. And all
that. I thought was one of the coolest scenes. Well, I will get to.
We're going to get to it. I just really want to point out that when going into this movie, I didn't expect a kind of hard-hitting look at alcoholism in adults.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't expect a look at broken friendships as much as I did, and reconnecting and going back to your hometown and all this stuff. I love this. I love this.
I got to say, though, out of all three of the Edgar Wright movies, this one really had the most heart
well,
to it.
Well, of this trilogy. Edgar Wright's done
well,
more
of the,
the Cornetto trilogy.
Yes. This really had, like, a real heart to it where, like, you really felt for the characters. Like, in Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz, you love the characters and everything, but you don't really feel for them, like, in this movie.
Yeah. Well, if I was to rank them, Shaun of the Dead is on top. That movie came out of nowhere and kicked my ass.
Yeah, you gotta remember, it came out over to us because this is an English series, the English people.
Well, even then, you know, I wasn't familiar with Spaced, but I went and watched Spaced directly after that, and Hot Fuzz was also great, but I think I like Shaun Dead best, this one second, Hot Fuzz third, just because I think I will always rank Alien Invasion over cop movie.
Yeah.
I think that's where I fall on it.
I'm not sure where I land on this, just because I don't know if I'm still riding that new movie high.
Yeah.
Because right now in my head I'm thinking, this is fresh and I love it, it's number one, but who knows, maybe a year down the road, watching them back to back, if I like Shaun of the Dead more.
Ooh.
But definitely.
Ooh, that's a good point. Yeah. Well, you know what we should do?
Trilogy?
Trilogy.
One back to back to back.
Trilogy marathon.
Yeah.
In order.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm down with that. Watching all the connecting things. There's so much connecting these three movies.
This will definitely be a Blu-ray that I pick up.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
You guys want to talk plot?
Sure. I would love to talk plot.
Let's talk plot. Just once again, warning. We are about to reveal everything about this movie. We're going to tell you the ending. We're going to tell you the story. If you haven't seen it, shut us off. If you haven't seen it and you don't care, keep listening. If you've seen it, enjoy. And if you don't plan on seeing it, listen to us anyway and you can pretend you did and sound cool.
And you save yourself $12.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't believe a movie is $12.
And do you remember when I bought the tickets this week, you were shocked that it was only 12 because we didn't actually see it in 3D IMAX for once.
Our buddy Justin, who did see the movie with us, who's playing poker right now, he usually like twists our arm to get the IMAX 3D experience. So like movies to us this summer was like $18, $50, $20.
I'll just go out on a limb and say Wolverine was a little more expensive than I would have cared for.
I would have got the fucking bootleg Asian version of this that movie. But
you know,
oh yeah, you came. You I forgot you. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
oh.
I was at Wolverine. Oh. You really got to take advantage of like half off Tuesdays.
Yeah, yeah. For certain flicks, World War Z. I didn't need 3D.
No.
But I'm saying, like,
I would have watched that on my phone.
Actually watched this thing a second time with my wife because she wanted to see it. She's like, "You went without me?" And I'm like, "Oh, shit."
Wife stuff.
But I'm like, "Fuck it, I'll watch it again."
Yeah.
We went on half off Tuesdays, $12 for the two tickets.
Oh,
like,
that's beautiful.
Fucking score.
Dirty theater, though?
$6 a piece.
No, Farmingdale.
Oh, really? At a good theater.
$6 a piece, you can't even beat that. Like, that's cheaper than regular tickets were when I was in high school.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, let's talk plot here.
Let's do it.
Alright, so this movie opens with a little narrative by the main character, Gary King, portrayed by Simon Pegg. And he's talking about when he was a kid, what was he, 17, 18, in 1990, with his buddies Peter, Oliver, oh man, Stephen, and Andy. And they were growing up in the town of Newton Haven, England. And they went on an epic pub crawl. Basically, it was a pint at each bar. And a pint's a good amount when you're 17.
Oh, yeah. Pint's a good amount right now, man. Pint for every... Yeah, 12 pints a night?
I would say there was a point in my life where I could have handled that and driven home.
Well, you know, I mean, I think it's better off when you're young, just because you get older, you don't drink as much, you start to lose the...
One of the points of this movie, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Is exactly the point of this movie. So it starts with him recounting this pub crawl. Wait... No, no, no. I want this captured.
Yeah.
In the spirit of the film, We are drinking pints.
Yeah, it's nice Guinness pints.
And these cans, they don't open quietly.
No, you're going to get about three more of these.
Three more of these. I'm about to do one myself. So they're doing what's called the Golden Mile, which is a 12-pub pub crawl throughout Newton Haven, where they pretty much just got fucked up, and they never made it to the end. Gary remembers this as...
They made nine deep.
The prime of his life. This was the epic night that he never finished.
Literally, this is the best night of his life.
Best night of his life. He can't ever top it. Cut to current day, and you see Gary is actually telling the story from an AA meeting.
Yeah, boy!
Yep. Nice.
I found this part, you know, among others, just be, like, especially sad, and you make, like, a connection with this particular movie with the characters more so than the other movies, I think. Because, you know, I think back, I'm like, man, I want to be that age again, just doing stupid shit and getting drunk.
God, I really felt that way. I was like, you know, yeah. I really felt a connection to the character. I really love Gary, man.
Big time.
No, well, I'll agree with you there. Like, in all the other movies, it didn't hook me as quick as this one. Like, Sean, from Shaun of the Dead, I liked him from the get-go because he was me. He was the lazy kind of guy, slackerish dude. On the surface level, you know? This guy goes way deeper. When he tells his story and he's had an AA meeting, I went, all right, this is different already than what I thought it was going to be. Like, this has another level to it. So after this, Gary decides that he wants to try to do the Golden Mile again. And through a pretty funny sequence, he recruits all four of his friends to join in. Which you kind of figure out where they all are.
And you know what's funny? Because he's literally at that moment in his life where he's still at that moment, while all four other guys
have moved on. He even dresses like he did in 1990.
Same outfit, basically. Trench coat.
Super goth. Not goth, but like, he listened to The Cure, for sure.
Trench coat, band t-shirt, fucking black jeans.
He even has the tattoo on his chest of the band.
I love this band still.
Yeah. I forget which band it was, but
I don't remember.
I thought that was funny. But so you got Peter, who is a family man. You got Oliver, or O-Man, who was the... he's now a real estate agent.
Yeah.
You got Steven. What did Steven do? Steven was the guy...
Steven was his rival. Steven was his rival. He's basically... He did construction. Yeah, he was building buildings, but he was basically his rival. You were starting a band. And then they have an ongoing joke with the band thing.
Yeah.
They were starting a band together in high school, and every couple minutes of the movie, they're like, oh, that'd be a great name for a band. Like, yep. Literally the whole movie.
I love that gag, by the way. That kept going. And lastly, Andy, played by Nick Frost, who was his kind of rugby playing buddy. The tough guy.
He was like the athlete, and he was just like the best, his best friend. Yeah.
And for reasons unbeknownst to us at this point, those two have had probably the biggest falling out of anybody.
He hates him.
He literally hates him.
Yeah.
Purely hate. All his friends have adult lives, they have responsibilities, families. Gary hasn't changed one bit, yet he manages to lure these guys in back to Newton Haven to do this pub crawl, which they do, reluctantly. And they only really do it because he convinces them that Andy's in on it. Andy's fine with it. And once they hear that, they're like, okay. Nobody really wants to be there except for Gary, right? He's really the only one who's into this thing.
He basically convinces everyone that Andy's coming back, and then the other three take the Andy's coming back? Oh, if Andy's going to go.
How'd you get him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they all sign on board, but he basically, Gary's the only one who really wants to do this.
Yeah. And they all end up together. They pile into the Beast, his old car, which, a hilarious sequence to me.
He's like, oh, this looks just like the car I sold you. And he's like, no, this literally is the car I sold you.
New engine, new paint job, new rear view, new transmission, new battery, new everything. But yeah, most part, it's the same car.
This is another moment that, you know, synced up with me. Just having a shitty car when you're young, like, you're so excited even though it's the biggest piece of shit.
Yeah.
My older brother had one of these, or a few of them.
You had a Beast?
One in particular where it was so bad. We literally had the handle on the window. It was a roll down window. Fell off.
I had one of those, dude.
On both sides, and to roll down the window, you had to pass around the handle.
Brian, do you remember my Jeep?
I remember your Jeep, yeah.
Remember when I had the rolling windows, and the window actually got stuck in the door, and we had to have our buddy come in with needle nose pliers and pull it out. And you can never open it again.
Yeah.
It was a 1988 Jeep Cherokee Laredo. I love that fucking
car. One of
car.
My favorite junkie car stories is my friend Rise Like Phoenix's brother, Full Metal.
We could call him Dan here.
Well, Dan's brother
We're
Jay.
We're not on A-Squad.
Dan's brother Jay.
The pickup?
What? Yeah, the it's like a Chevrolet or some shit.
The pick-em-up.
And literally this happened within 3 minutes of each other where I was driving with him and his keys fell out of the ignition when we were driving, which I've never seen before. And then he went to go put on his wipers because it was raining, and it snapped off.
And then the wiper busted.
Literally, the wiper snapped off. And
I remember that.
Yeah. I was like, oh, dude, that is fucked up, man.
See what this movie's done already? Yeah, we're reminiscing about the movie, which in turn has made us reminisce about our lives, and that's what I loved about this movie.
This movie will remind you of your early 20s.
It made me, well, especially if you're a guy between the age of 30 and 40, maybe even younger. If you're a guy who's feeling his age a little bit, this is...
It's perfect movie for you. Even if you're 60 and you just want to feel young again.
Yeah, and you
just,
had that youth.
Pining for, you know, your glory days and whatnot.
Now, see, this is affecting me negatively because I have my rating in my head and now I'm like, tens! Tens across the board. I love it. I really loved it. But let's get back to the plot. So where are we? We're headed back into town.
They just got back into town.
They get back in. Gary's still acting like big king shit. Nobody else is really buying into it. Nobody else really wants to be there. And they reluctantly start their pub crawl at the Old Familiar, which is a good running joke in the movie. That the town has been kind of commercialized.
I love, like, the first couple bars are just Starbucks, basically.
They're the same bar, each and every one, with the same food, drinks. They all have the same drink
layout.
On tap.
It has the same layout.
Same exact layout. It's clearly filmed in the same building.
Yeah.
So they go in there, they have a pint, except for Andy. Andy's clean and sober. He's having a tap.
Of rain.
That was one of my favorite lines in the movie. We're all here having a pint, and you're drinking... fucking rain.
Yeah, that was good.
When he said drinking rain, man, that got me laughing, man. He was so disgusted that rain came out of his mouth.
It was so good. That was one of the best. So anyway, they're met at the bar by Oliver, or O-Man, so named because he had a birthmark on the side of his head in the shape of an O.
Which comes into play later.
Comes into play in a big way.
But it was a six.
Oh, it was a six. Omen.
Devil
looked
child.
Like a six. Omen. O-Man. That's what it was. His sister shows up, Sam, played by Rosamund Pike, who's always nice to see.
She's still a good-looking chick for, like, 45.
I like her. I like her a lot.
Yeah.
She's never done anything.
Was she the chick in Spaced, or was that the girl in
she was in...
Shaun of the Dead.
I could tell you in a second exactly what she's been in. I don't think she was necessarily either. I've seen her in a ton of things. Mainly, I remember her from that Bond movie. She was Die Another Day.
Yeah?
Yeah, she was in
Is that the one with Christmas?
I believe... that was the one with
Christmas Jones. Alright.
Anything else beyond there?
And then they all get a pint, and it sounds like this.
For some reason, dude, that sounded like you were hitting the bong.
I gotta say, though, I was watching a movie on Labor Day Monday, and I was like, I want a beer. Not a beer, a lager. A nice, frosty pint lager.
Well, that's why, and we talked about this before the show, is while we were sitting here watching it, I was like, Gary is Brian. Like, those are the same dudes. I couldn't put myself into any particular role, but I was like, that dude's Brian.
I definitely found a lot of myself in that particular
character. If we were fighting robots in a bar, you would be the guy who had to stop and take a swig.
You know, I kind of connected with that as well, just because I'm, you know, out of work and, like, trying to just illustrate and that's it, but I just want to fuck around and do nothing.
Yeah. To that. Salud.
Salud.
Slanja.
Are we cheersing?
Slanja.
Yeah.
Right. If you can't tell, we're having some fun here.
This is after a Paint Black podcast. A nice couple Guinnesses to get us in the mood.
It's 12:30 in the morning. And
we're podcasting. We're just doing it right now, man. I love it.
All right. Where were we? Okay. So
things are still normal.
So he's met Sam. Sam came in, said hello to the boys. What we know
from gave me the signal. Come on.
What we know from the flashback is Sam and Gary got together back in the day during the first run of the Golden Mile. They banged in a disabled bathroom.
And I love his hubris where that night, he was like, oh, yeah, we got together in the hand, and what's it, the, what do they call it? It was like the
disabled.
The disabled. They, oh, I remember that word all the time. We got, we they hooked him to the disabled, and then he moved on with other chicks that night.
Yeah.
And like, he was such,
he dumped,
like,
her at the next bar.
Yeah. He was basically such the king, and now he's coming back, and he's like, oh, I thought you gave me the signal, blah, 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 and the disabled. You know, I know the disabled aren't working right now, but, you know, I thought.
Well, the point is, his hubris is to the point where he's.
He's still that guy.
He still thinks he's 17 and he could just bang chicks in the bathroom and all this, and that's not the case. It's,
yeah.
So, of course, she rejects him. They continue their little tour. What we find out is Steven, his buddy Steven, part of the crew, has always been in love with Sam and never forgiven Gary for banging her during the original pub crawl. He always held it kind of against him. One of the reasons they were kind of rivals during this whole thing. So they move on to the next bar, which I believe was the Famous Cock. Am I right there?
Oh, real quick, forgot to mention that a big part of it, getting them there, was lying about his mother dying.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. Great point. The only way he got Andy to join them was to say his mother died.
Yeah. And they generally all felt bad. They're like, oh, let's go for Gary, you know, let's, you know. But eventually, you'll find out that's not the case.
Well, did you not sense that right when he said it?
Yeah, big time.
You knew he was full of shit.
Well, to be honest with you, like, you come into the character, like, when he's bottoming out. So, like, I didn't know if his mom died or not. It could have been, like, maybe a thing that really just made him want to do this. So, like, I didn't really, like, I thought he might have been lying, but I was like, maybe he's being sincere, and, like, this was what really made him want to get his boys back together.
Well, you knew it was. It was him telling the story.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I wasn't surprised when he was lying.
He was so lost in the world. He has no real identity other than that of the 17-year-old version of himself, that, of course, he was going to pull out whatever stops he could in order to get these guys together to relive his glory days one last time. So I knew from the get-go, his mom's alive.
Yeah.
It was kind of crazy obvious, but it made for a good reveal later on. So they head to the next bar. They do the same thing, but Gary gets tossed out of the Famous Cock. I like saying that.
Well, he does get his drink, though.
Yeah, he...
Which was just gnarly.
Yeah, he drinks a bunch of beers that are just left on a table outside. But that's kind of the point of him. He's an alcoholic. He's a hardcore drunk. And he's, you know.
It just sort of, I don't know if it foreshadows necessarily, but I think you get it at this point that he's willing to do anything to complete the run.
And his goal is to have a pint at every bar. Yeah. He can't leave a bar without a drink.
Yeah.
And that's actually a major running theme throughout the movie, too. Mm-hmm. So he drinks these dirty leftover beers. And they move on to the next bar, the Cross Hands. Now, I don't know about you guys, but at this point, I could watch an entire movie about a pub crawl. Sans Aliens.
Yeah, I could have watched the rest of the movie and it not been funny or action-y.
This movie could have turned into a drama at this point, and I'm in. I'm sold.
Yeah, it didn't need to have robots. It was that good.
I cared about each and every one of these dudes. I cared about their stories. Like, I
really want to know why Andy was so mad at Gary for, you know, like, he had, like, such a problem with him. I was like, I can't wait till they show what the problem was. Like, what was the rift?
Yeah, you knew that was going to be the kind of big reveal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that takes us to the next bar, the Cross Hands. On the sign, some hands praying.
Was it? I thought it was four hands together.
Was it the four hands?
Making like a,
it was like boom,
square.
Like that.
You know what? You're right.
Yeah.
I think I'm confusing. There were so many bars.
You're confusing Latino tattoos. It's a little hands praying. Like,
yeah.
They love Jesus and baby Jesus.
Hang on a second. We
can't handle it.
I feel like I need to participate. So as we go into the Cross Hands.
Oh. We're doing our own little pub crawl here. Every bar we get another pint.
Oh, man. You really got to slug these down when they open.
Oh, they're fantastic.
Mm. And I quit drinking, for the record.
You know, that's not true at all. This makes me want to do like our local bar, you know.
I would love to do a local bar, a pub crawl. Like, you know,
it's a little more complicated around here.
In particular, there are two bars. One of my buddies who, you know, drinks too much. He has championed these particular goals that each bar has. One of them was drink 100 different beers.
100 different beers?
Over what amount of time?
Any amount of time, but he did it in like a year. And then he got his plaque on the
board. I could bang that out in a month.
The other one was drink 100 Guinness at a different bar.
My friend Kyle Dowd did that.
And he got two plaques for that one because he did it twice.
Done and done.
My friend Kyle Dowd got a 200 Guinness plaque at Last Call.
Kyle did that?
Yeah.
Kyle's such a small dude.
It's like he did it in like a week. The guy did it over like course of time. Like
I'm just saying, when you picture a guy who drinks a lot, you don't picture Kyle.
An Irishman?
No, you don't picture a slender man.
He's slender until you get to his beer gut. It's like it's, the older like he gets, Ethiopian. The nicer it gets.
Yeah. Oh, I know that well. I recently worked really hard to reduce mine.
Well, it's rough when your main diet is Jameson and Guinness.
Cheers. All right. Well, let's get back to the cross hands because that's where shit starts going down. Gary heads to the bathroom to take a leak, and one of the local teenagers walks in who,
Oh, my.
I love it. So anyway, local teenager comes in. Gary starts trying to chat him up. You know, I was the big shit back in the day. Hey, you want to come with us? I'm the guy. I'm the guy. This kid's paying no attention to him. So he hits him, knocks the kid's head off, right? And exposes him as a robot. He's a robot. They have blue, inky blood. He's like,
you don't want to do this.
Yeah. At that point, you know, he knocks his head off. He's freaking out. All his friends come into the bathroom. Hey, what's going on? And, oh, Luke?
Well, I think we're jumping the gun a little bit.
Am I skipping shit?
Because...
You got to help me out with this stuff.
They're having this conversation. The little guy, Oliver, he...
Is that the guy with the Bluetooth, or is that the guy who...
Martin Freeman's Oliver. He's the guy, yeah, he's got the Bluetooth. He played the Hobbit.
No, no, who's the little...
That's the Hobbit?
Little
That's the guy
twerp.
From the Hobbit?
That's the Hobbit.
The guy who looks Peter. Like Teller.
Peter. Peter's the guy who looks like Teller, yeah.
So, they're having this conversation, and he encounters...
How's that for a slice of fried gold?
He encounters his old, like, high school bully.
Oh, that's a great scene!
Yeah.
That's a phenomenal...
Yeah, boy!
I know, we got all the Simon Pegg shit going on.
They have all this intense all right, talk. Guy.
No, they have a great scene where he confronts his high school bully,
yeah.
And who... comes up looking for a chair, yeah. Like for a bar stool, and he goes, "Hey, yeah, boy, you sitting here?" He's like, "No, no."
Takes and he actually says, "Is like he used to bully me all the time when I was a kid, and the worst part was he didn't even know who I was. Like it didn't mean anything.
He didn't recognize me." And that also brings me to the point that we should bring up is that even though Gary's walking to the bar going, "Hey, it's me, it's the king," nobody knows who he is, yeah. And he finds that jarring. And we, as an audience, are like, "Well, it's because you're an old dude now, dude."
Yeah,
like. You're not the legend you think you are, but realistically, there's something deeper going on in the town. And that part made me cry, almost, because I was like...
That character is very sad.
I knew that feeling. I got picked on when I was a kid. I've run into my bullies. And
yeah.
I've since had conversations with guys who picked on me in, like, grade school. And it that would break my heart if I was him. And I fell for him.
Yeah, this is another moment where you really connect with the guys.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that part. And then the payoff is excellent.
And then they also mention, the marmalade sandwich.
Yeah.
The red two blondes and a redhead.
Like these, this conquest that they had with the two blondes and the redhead.
Marmalade sandwich. I got a full chubby when she sucked that ring off of her finger, man.
And Gary.
You like the marmalade in there?
Oh yeah.
Gary goes to the bathroom, and that's when they discover that his mom is ringing him. And she's not dead.
That's when they find out that the mom's alive. Yes. Okay, I'm sorry. I missed the whole batch there.
So that's why they storm in after he destroys the first robot.
Right, and he's sitting there with the dead body of the robot while they're like, "Hey, your mom's not dead." Doing the whole thing. Which leads to probably the best sequence of events ever. Is
yeah, boy!
Hell yeah, boy! After the kids come in, all the robot teens... And one of the coolest fight scenes, body parts ripping off, he's beating the dude with his own arms. Like, what a good, well-choreographed movie this is. Even though they are schlubs. They're these...
No, well, Gary and Andy and what's the other guy who's Andy?
Steven?
Those three guys could fight. The one guy with the headset...
Oliver.
Oliver, he's not good, and the other guy hides.
Peter.
Peter yeah. hides.
Yeah.
But they're not, they can hold their own. They're not bad.
Andy.
Wayne's a goddamn monster.
He's a fucking beast.
And Gary's a fucking beast, too, in that movie. Like, he's ripping up
people. That's one of the things I loved about it, is you really do instantly, well, I did anyway, suspend disbelief that it's like, these guys couldn't be able to fight like this. No, they fight like beasts.
No, when I saw that, I was thinking, they're doing, like, WWF moves.
I chalked it up to that. I chalked it up to, oh, they must have gotten into some bar fights when they were kids.
Like, what's Andy does, like, the Lex Luger move.
He does. He puts him on the torture rack. He gives him a backbreaker.
Yeah. And I'm like, holy shit. He gives him the fucking flying elbow.
It's one of my favorite moves when he snaps him, like, Bane hits yeah. Batman, you know?
Like, I'm like, this is pure wrestling. Like, if I was fighting people, I'd probably do this stupid shit like this, too.
I would
too.
Love that.
Yeah.
So they beat up these robots. And they decide to, all right, we know they're robots. We're going to go out to the bar. We're going to act like everything's normal. And I love that shot of them exiting the bathroom. They're covered in blue ink. And they're all like, hey, how's it going, guys? Yeah. That's when Andy stops being a teetotaler. And he's... Well, Gary shows up with five shots for five guys.
Boom.
Andy beautifully drinks every one of them.
Boom! Yummy!
Yeah. And he drinks them in a way that's so satisfying, because it's not like he's just downing them like, ugh. He gives a little, after each one, like, oh, sweet baby, I missed you.
This leads to, I think, the funny scene in the movie, when they leave that bar.
No, that's the next bar, but I know what you're talking about, and we can get to it, where Sam shows back up. We'll get to it. All right, so they decide that the plan of attack... is that all the robots don't know that they know that they're robots, so we're just going to be cool. We're going to continue our pub crawl and avoid any suspicion. And the second we finish our last drink, we're out the door. We're gone. So they head to the next bar, the two-headed dog, where they run back into Sam. And the two-headed dog is... Now, I believe that's the... is that the club one?
No.
That's the next one. That's the mermaid.
Yes.
Yes. So they go to the two-headed dog, they run into Sam, they kind of recruit Sam into their thing, and they save her from the twins.
Right.
Oh my god, that was like a freaky fight where like they mess with the two twins and then they combine body parts.
Sam's friends are two female twins who act very bizarre. And
as twins do.
Gary manages to beat them up and basically knocks out the one, rips the arms off one. That one hits the ground, tears the arms off the other, and attaches them as arms. So she's got legs as arms, working in, like, super kick mode.
Yeah, I mean, this was done so well. Like, I was like, how the fuck did they manage to pull this off and make it look legit?
Yeah. I love that part.
Yeah.
One of my favorite lines came from that part.
Which was?
Which is, like, talking about how you slept with the twins. He's like, yeah, but I was drunk, so technically four of them.
Yeah, yeah.
It's, like, a little weird. And, well, let's skip ahead. They blah, 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 end up at the Mermaid, the next bar, which is a club. This is the young people bar. This is the loud place where they meet the Marmalade Sandwich once more. Who? Holy crap, you're on another?
Yes. I'm trying to keep up, man. Bump crawl.
Wow.
We're like bar seven.
I know, we're like bar four or five here. now I feel like I should take a sip. Hold on.
These mics are pretty powerful.
Yeah, that sounded just like me when I was like...
Don't do that.
In one sound effect, that's what this movie is about.
I love how disturbed you are.
Why do you think I drink this from a crazy straw?
Wow.
That was what's his face from Game of Thrones?
We are getting to that, yes. Too. They also run into... Let me find his name here. I forgot.
Basil.
Basil! Basil was the crazy old, he's crazy old drunk, right?
Yeah, he's the twins from the Game of Thrones.
He's the weird, like, conspiracy theory kook the town has.
And now Basil still lives in this town, but he drinks all of his beers out of a crazy straw that he carries with him. That's important to mention.
Why do you think I drink all these beers out of a crazy straw?
I'm not crazy! So they end up, where are we? We're at the Mermaid.
Yes.
Okay.
By the way, like I didn't want to be like aroused by that, but that was a sexy girl scene. Like the girls are sucking rings off her fingers and just being all hot.
I didn't find the girls that attractive because they were British.
Yeah, I didn't think they were that hot.
Bad teeth everywhere.
But I could appreciate how like their high school sweethearts or whatever. That's what entices the three guys.
Yeah. Now, the thing that really sets it off... Now, these girls are doing these seductive dances, and they're in schoolgirl outfits, and they are sucking the wedding bands off these guys' fingers and doing all these moves. What really tips you off that something is amiss is Sam. Her childhood crush, Adrian, shows up and offers up some kind words until...
I like you, and I want you.
Sounded a little something like that, but British. I like you. And I won't shop. So he shows up, and then she freaks out because she reveals he died. He's been dead for a few years. He died in a motorcycle accident.
Like James Dean.
Like, well, I guess. Right. He was a handsome guy, I guess. they escape that place again, but now things are starting to come into play. We're now starting to see the big picture that...
Sums afoot.
People are being replaced by robots. From years before. So, next bar. Where are we? We're at the Beehive.
Now this is where the good fight happens.
Now, this is the great part, because now we're introduced to Guy Shepard, who was Gary's professor back in the day, played by a
007.
A definitely underutilized Pierce Brosnan. I was a little upset by how little he was in it.
Look.
Because these movies have a history of using past Bonds.
What was Shaun of the Dead?
Nobody.
It just really had the 80s.
It had Brosnan, and it had, and Hot Fuzz had Daltrey.
Boom! Oh, yeah. Yummy! Forgot about that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dalton. I'm sorry. Timothy Dalton. Timothy Dalton. I said yeah. Daltrey like he's in The Who.
Robert Daltrey.
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. That's three movies, two Bonds. Not a bad spree there.
I kind of feel bad the first one didn't have a Bond, like even a lesser Bond like Lazenby.
But they also have a history of maybe including. It did. Game of Thrones guys.
Well, yeah.
Yarg.
Yeah. Actually,
Yarp.
Yarp. Well, was there any Game of Thrones guys?
I thought he said that Basil was somebody.
Basil is guy in the Red Wedding.
Mm-hmm.
He's the twins. He's the tower guy. Remember, he promised his daughter to be married to Rob Stark?
I forget the guy's name, but he's a scumbag who orchestrates the whole thing. And then, yeah, the big dude, I forget his name in the movie, but in Hot Fuzz, he's the Yarp. That's the Hound, which always cracks me up now that I watch Hot Fuzz. It's like, he's not a badass as much as he is.
He went from being just a dope to cutting horses' heads off.
You watch Game of Thrones, he's gutting dudes. Yeah. And then you watch Hot Fuzz, Yarp. But Shaun of the Dead didn't have anybody, but that was like a decade before Game of Thrones came out, so we can't ever fault them for that. But anyway, back to the bar. Where are we? We are in
the Beehive. This is right for the good fight.
So Guy Shepard, Pierce Brosnan, rolls up, and basically this is where the reveal happens.
He lays it all out for him.
He's like, look, yes, robots, you guys want to be one? It's for a good cause. And they're like, no. And...
He tells him that basically you can have selective memories if you just give up yourself right now.
He says, accept your fate, become the robots. It's a good thing. And they notice that Oliver, O-Man, his birthmark that he had since had removed since he was an adult.
Actually, Andy noticed it.
Yeah. But he had it removed as an adult and all of a sudden it's back.
Yeah.
We find out that's because they take DNA when they can. And sometimes that DNA may be a little older.
And right when they realize that, they're all making out with those fucking the marmalade girls. With
the marmalade sandwich.
I thought that, when they go to that bar, he goes off to the bathroom. And I thought that's when they take him.
It wasn't clear to me in the theater watching it the one time I've seen
because
it.
Because he comes back, right? And then he is crazy happy. You know, they see Guy.
Yeah.
And he's talking to Guy and he's like, so what you're saying is you're not here to hurt us at all.
Yeah.
And he's super...
He comes across like an ambassador.
And that's when I was like, oh, something's up. And of course, that's when Andy smashes his fucking head.
Which I loved.
Yeah.
Because this initiates probably my favorite fight scene in the whole movie.
Mm-hmm. My favorite part about that fight scene is Gary trying to drink that pint.
This is what I'm talking about, choreography, when it comes to the fight. This was the most beautifully choreographed fight scene I've ever seen. You got Nick Frost as Andy with two bar stools in his hands as boxing gloves, plowing the heads off robots left and right. And they all do that. Yeah, boy! they all do that thing where they're like, and their mouths open wide, and it shoots out the blue light and everything.
Yeah, they. I thought it was always weird where, like, every time they wanted to, like, you know, reveal that they're there themselves and come at you, they always gave you, like, the fucking, like, the Third Reich, Heil Hitler, and the fucking, the eyes open up and the mouth open wide, and they start walking at you.
And they go blue, and they grab your face.
Yeah.
That's, like, their number one move.
They mush the shit out of you.
Well, because they're getting your DNA. That's what they're trying to do.
You know, who hasn't done that when they were a kid? Like, you're like a little brother, and like he's trying to punch you, and you just mush his face.
And you mush his face.
He can't get to you.
You could tell that me and Lou had siblings, and Brian didn't, because we find that way funnier.
Just like, they're swinging as hard
you
as
can't
they can.
Touch me.
Right, they can't get you.
But yeah, Gary trying to take a sip out of that pint, that whole scene, beautiful.
I love when they
it's
get, like,
spilling up, he's catching it back in the cup, he's trying to take a sip, and somebody takes out his legs, and he catches the beer again.
He starts
so good.
Cussing over it. He's like, God damn it. You know?
So they get overwhelmed. And they scatter. And well, Gary takes Sam to his car, telling her, leave. Leave now. This is a bad place to be. Telling her kind of the situation. They reunite. All the buddies reunite. Sam's gone. Sam leaves. They reunite. And they all go into this scene. Where do they end up? They end up at their old, like, pot-smoking place. Where they're...
No, that was another pub where they bought pot from one particular guy.
They bought the pot from the guy who got... Well, we skipped that part. There's the guy who used to sell him drugs.
He got in trouble for talking to him, basically.
And he talked to them, and he got kind of pulled away.
That was at the pub we had just mentioned, though.
Yeah.
That's how they discovered the robots and started talking about robots. But you're right. They do go to this old...
Oh,
looks
kind
like
of
a house or
busted
shack.
Down, abandoned building.
Yeah.
I wasn't clear on where exactly it was.
Right.
But now they're trying to each prove to each other they're not robots, because a friend of theirs just turned. So they're showing the scars, and it leads to a pretty decent storytelling device where now we get to find out what exactly happened between Gary and Andy. And we find out that what really happened was Gary was driving. Correct me if I'm wrong, right?
Yeah, I'll correct you.
Wait, no. It was Andy driving.
Gary passed out.
Andy was driving Gary because Gary was... Overdosing.
Gary was overdosing. Andy was driving the car,
and he was
flipped.
He was fucking drunk, though.
He was passed out.
He flipped, and then when he woke up,
Gary ran out,
bounced on him,
and Andy was left
to deal with everything.
To deal with the police, and he got
busted, and that like wrecked his life in some sort of way. And then he changed life. He didn't hang out with Gary ever since then.
Yeah. In fact, in order to even avoid having to relive that story, Gary bashes his head against a pillar multiple times to prove himself.
I felt, you know, like a lot of like emotions between those two characters. They were just so like, you know, connected to each other. And when they were telling those stories, I was like, God damn, that's fucking rough. And like, you know,
now,
comedy
this,
movie, it's like it's a fucking
this
real
was
story.
One of my favorite scenes in the flick, because there's so much going on at once. Between the humor and the tension and the personalities and, God, they really crammed a lot into a little space. And he's, you know, that scene's particularly emotional and gives you a lot of closure as to what's going on. But outside those doors, while you're having this great cathartic human moment, you have robots.
Just whipping ass.
You see them coming because they're all blue lit and everything and they're running past the place. So they gotta run away. And they end up running into the forest, I believe, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's a very rural town. They end up in these trees. At which point, what's his name? Peter runs into his old high school bully robot.
And just starts going
And just goes buck nutty. Unfortunately, Peter is killed during this. Or replaced.
He is officially replaced during it. They're very unclear of what happens to you when you're replaced, but
they tell you at the end.
Basically,
you're crushed into mulch and used as fuel.
Yes. You're basically replaced.
At that point, knowing the ending, it's kind of comforting to know that at the end, Peter smashed a head out of the dude who caused him so much misery.
Yeah.
He got that pleasure.
But I felt very bad for the character because he, like...
Oh, he was such a nice dude.
He was a very nice guy.
He was probably the most sympathetic of the crew.
Yeah. But at that point... You don't know that what happened to the guys, and you're still holding on to the hope that somewhere they're like frozen or something.
I kind of was hoping that they were just in stasis.
Yeah, because I mean, when Basil, you know, comes around to sort of tell him what's going on, he doesn't answer that question, like, what happens to the people they take?
Yeah.
And he leaves that as a mystery. And at this point, you're like, oh, man, I really hope the guys are still around.
You want them to come back.
Yeah.
You really, really do, because you like Old Man. You like Peter. Mm-hmm. You don't want anything bad to happen to these guys. Within a short amount of time, they manage to make you attached to it. But the big point of this moment in the movie is that Gary is so goddamn hell-bent determined to finish this pub crawl that he's running on foot through robots.
This is 10, 11, and 12 are all this.
And he's just, get in there, beat some ass, chug a beer, move on. Beat ass, chug a beer, move on. Like
10, it's not bad. You know, he sees Andy be like, come on, man, let's get the fuck out of here. We got the car.
And Andy's left doing the dirty work. He's left fighting the robots and even the robot statue. The statue's coming after him. There was a big modern art installation in Milltown. Looked like a giant robot knight. That thing is alive. That's a robot chasing them down, trying to kill them.
He's basically just working his way through what's the town again?
Oh, Newton Haven.
Newton Haven. He's basically just beating up robots through Newton Haven while Gary's trying to get pints.
Just trying to drink. Yeah. He's just desperate to get some beer in him.
And it's kind of cathartic because like he doesn't care about anything but finishing the crawl.
Yeah, exactly. But that takes us to the most important moment of the movie, the climax, which is the aforementioned The World's End, the final bar of this pub crawl. This was a very beautiful and difficult moment, I thought.
I loved how they incorporated so many things from the movie, where they basically, the whole movie, they kept talking up Gary's, like, he's never wrong, you can't win an argument with him.
Like Brian.
That's what I'm saying. And when the fucking network is trying to talk to him, which the network you
find... Well, we're not even up to the network.
All right.
Let's not even go there yet, because there's a whole moment in that bar between Gary and Andy that's just wonderful. It's excellent. Yeah, boy! I love the last part of that, the clang. So, like, they begin to fight. Andy sees that he's got that rehab clinic armband on him.
No, I thought it was that he had his wrist bandaged.
Yeah, it was a wristband from the...
No, I thought his wrists were bandaged up.
Yeah.
He tried to commit suicide.
Oh, was it that? I thought it was...
He had tried to...
The medical bracelet.
He did have a medical bracelet, but he had tried to commit suicide.
Oh, see, I focused on the bracelet. I didn't see beyond the bracelet. So, yeah, he had tried to kill himself. See, that adds a whole new level to me. Yeah.
It was that...
See, I didn't even pick up on that. That's beautiful. Mm-hmm.
So he tried to commit suicide, and then that's when he got admitted.
Yeah, basically. Gary can't even distinguish if he's drunk or sober anymore. They have this tearful moment. He tells them that the only thing that matters in his life is his fucking pub crawl. That's all he has left, and everyone else has families and wives, and this is all he's got. And it's a great moment. He finally goes, and he goes to pour his final beer, finish his fucking thing.
Well, actually, that particular bar had the beer waiting for him, for whatever reason.
It did. But they got into the fight.
I was going to say that's the one thing that took me out of it for, like, just a second.
Is when they would walk in, there'd be the beers sitting there.
He walks in, and it's like there's, like, this heavenly glow on... On this one particular beer.
That's just good direction, dude. That's just interesting direction.
I was willing to let it go. It was just such a tiny moment. I was like, forget it. I don't care.
And the other thing we should mention at this point is that Andy even admits at this point that his life isn't good.
Yeah, his wife is leaving him with the key, trying to take the kids and shit.
Yeah, so she's leaving him, and Gary just kind of blows past this and goes to pull the tap for the final pint, which instead triggers an elevator.
Yeah, and then they go down to the depths,
and they're lowered into this hidden facility, I guess you would call it, like a people. All the robots are surrounding him. It's like a big cylindrical thing.
All the people from the town there.
Like a smaller version of like the Galactic Senate.
Yeah. Like that big kind of like auditorium style thing.
Coliseum.
And they're lower down there. Steven finds them down there, by the way. He rappels down a rope to get to them. Yeah. And they're confronted with the network. The network is the head of this robot organization, who is voiced by Bill Nighy, who I was wondering when he would show up, because he was in all the others.
Bill, is that the old guy who became a zombie?
Bill Nighy, and you would know best as Sean's stepfather in Shaun of the Dead.
That's what I'm saying. He's the like, police, there's nothing of the man you loved in there. And he turns up the radio.
Yeah. The police captain in Hot Fuzz. And probably most famously, Davy Jones from the Pirates movies.
No. Definitely most famously, he was the vampire in that Lycan movie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He was in the Underworld movies. He played Kate Beckinsale's father.
He played the hot chicks, whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, he's a great actor. I like him a lot. He's got a just thing about him that's excellent.
If those Underworld movies, by the way, can you play the Homer Simpson boring?
Hang on.
Underworld, by the way, is this good.
My iTunes froze. I can't.
No, you can't?
It'll play in about a minute and yell at me while I'm in the middle of a story. All right. That's how this will work out, but I'm going to let it happen.
Bart! That was my Homer Simpson.
Bart!
Boring!
I told you.
I hate those Underworld movies.
Anyway, Underworld.
Ah! Boogeyman!
Okay. Right. So, the network. The network is the controlling force behind this robot, and his goal is to integrate these robots as a way of civilizing a culture before the invasion, right?
I think it's more like this alien presence, more or less, has seen something in humans that he thinks is... They're ready to get on the intergalactic stage...
And yeah, but under his dominance is the big thing. And the other thing he mentions that's kind of super important is that every little piece of technology in the past 20 years has been laptops, iPods, internet.
They basically helped us out.
Everything was this? The cause. And that there are penetration points, they call them, throughout the globe. It's not just a small town in England. It's everywhere.
They have robots, a bunch of entrance points.
Which I thought was great because technology, you know... jumped so quickly in the last.
Did anyone get the impression from that South Park episode with the space bucks? Where they remember the intergalactic?
I remember that, but I didn't. I didn't draw that.
Kind of like that. Where
no, this was actually really to some people I've spoken to about the movie. I've seen it. Didn't like the ending.
I love the ending.
I thought the ending was phenomenal, I thought the whole thing about how the robots were actually what. Kind of gave technology its legs were the most important thing in modern society that made the most sense.
Yeah.
I like that the best.
I like the whole idea of the ending. I thought it was great. Yeah.
Well, let's get into the ending because the network offers our heroes an out. He says, you can become robots and live forever in your prime. He even brings down the robots of their youth.
That was probably the craziest scene to me where he stared himself in the eye he's been dreaming about the whole movie about that day, and he stared himself in the eyes of that day.
If we're to believe this movie, though, Simon Pegg was a lot more handsome as a young man.
Oh, yeah. Regardless, he's staring himself at 18. And it's so weird because he's all he wanted to be in the movie is him at 18.
Yeah, and now he's 40 and he's got nothing.
And the best part of the movie is when he's like, fuck it.
And he tears the head off that robot.
He's like, I want to be me.
And this is my favorite part of the entire movie. It's rare that you can say that about the climax of a movie, that's your favorite fucking part. This was my favorite
Unless
part.
It's a porno.
Well, that's the ultimate climax. So they were like... They tear the head off and they start fighting the network. We're going to be free. Humans deserve to be free. And they back and forth arguments. Obviously, this giant robot brain is fighting with a group of drunk men.
Yes.
They're wasted.
They're hammered. Their logic makes no sense. And that's the best part of the movie is the climax. Is when they're like, you can't stop us. We're humans. We deserve to be free. And the network just simply says, all right, fuck it.
When the network was like, fuck it. And it was like, you win. I don't care. You Planet Earth, whatever.
Right. I fucking laughed harder than I've ever laughed at a movie at that one moment.
Yeah, and then they're like, we're arguing with a fucking lamp.
It's because he's a light.
When they call it a lamp, oh my God.
It was the best moment since an hour prior when he called water rain.
Right. I love the fact that the machine basically just got tired of it. It was just
ugh.
I'm not going to win the argument. These people are retarded. Like, whatever.
Now, I believe I leaned over to Justin at this moment and said, it's like talking to Brian when he's drunk.
No, it's like talking to Brian when he's sober. You're just not going to win the argument.
You're not going to win. You know you're right. You just know he's not going to give you an inch.
You're only as right as I am wrong.
So you just walk away and you go, fuck it, I'm done.
It's especially good because throughout the movie, they mention how you can't win an argument with Gary King,
and they get frustrated with it.
Yeah, no, that's a
they literally get frustrated with him like four or five times. They're like, oh.
And then they meet this intergalactic super being, and
who can't win an argument with Gary King?
Even it can't win an argument. Yeah.
What seems to be your boggle?
My boggle?
Wrong sci-fi movie, but appreciate it.
Yeah.
So the network decides to self-destruct, blowing up all the aliens.
I didn't think it self-destructed. It was just like, it left.
It left, but all the robots self-destruct.
Yeah.
All the replicants.
No, all the robots just kind of like are in limbo there.
Oh, no, you're right, because the robots don't blow up. The facility blows up.
All the technology is gone.
The robots kind of just go limp.
It sets
and
off
like
an EMP
that
basically destroys all modern technology.
With a very exciting escape scene.
Yeah.
Where our boys get away from...
Yeah, boy!
I gotta like high five myself every time I hear that, just to get that clank. So big, good escape scene, and they get it free, and then we jump forward a little time, and we realize the world ended at the moment that they won,
and we're at the title,
and we're at the world's end.
Yeah, you gotta love the just the word.
Now this is where the movie took a huge dark turn.
Now it's a dark turn, but I didn't see it so much as a dark turn because I felt it was a happy ending.
Right. I felt the same way, like, even though the world has come to an end, that
all right, but to be honest,
everyone was sort of better off for it.
They were all where they needed to be.
Yeah. To be honest with you, when you went into the movie, did you think that the world was literally going to end?
No, I thought it was going to be a silly pub crawl with robots.
Right.
That's why the ending kind of delighted me.
Well, it was fantastic.
They took a chance.
I thought this was a legitimate great sci-fi movie. Like, regardless of Simon Pegg and Nick Frost and the funniness of the movie... Sci-fi wise, it was a great script.
Yeah. When they destroyed this facility, there was an EMP blast that wiped out modern technology as a whole, basically sending people back into the Middle Ages. It became the Dark Ages.
Six String Samurai.
And it cuts back. Oh, God, I love that movie.
I only say that because when Gary's with all his boys, a lot of guitars.
I forgot that movie. I'm going to watch that later. Watch Six String Samurai. It's a movie about Buddy Holly who goes on the samurai quest to reclaim Las Vegas.
I've heard about it, but I've never gotten it.
Oh, it's dude, right up your alley.
I'm going to give you that movie. You will love that movie.
Please do.
Anyway, back...
Yeah, boy!
That is getting a lot of use to it.
Anyway, back to this movie. Remind me about that. So it's an EMP that wipes out all the technology. It's Andy sitting around a campfire telling the story of him and his heroic friends who saved the world. And we kind of get an epilogue to everyone, which I liked. Even though our friends who died are robots, at least they had happy robot lives. Andy recovers his marriage. Steven ends up with Sam and they end up with a little nice cottage where they live together for the rest of their lives.
The robots of the other
Peter
two guys.
Goes back to his family, and even though he's a robot, he decides to keep living his family life, and he does a little like hand trick where he pulls his hand off like and it crawls around his back. And
the one with the Bluetooth keeps selling houses.
Oliver keeps selling houses even though he's a volleyball head.
Right. Yeah. That I thought was great.
He had like that void head on. Oh,
that was super funny. When you see him with the volleyball head, that was great. And then that leaves Gary.
I do want to mention quickly that, you know, you see Andy, and he's like, I don't miss any of the, you know, modern conveniences. And then the Cornetto ice cream paper
hits the fence.
He's like, oh, no.
And he's like, no.
To me, that was equal parts great and takes me out of it.
Now, wait.
Because it was me going, Cornetto. No, all right, I see what they did. I was waiting the whole movie to see a Cornetto ice cream.
As far as Easter eggs go, the one had the red ice cream in Shaun of the Dead.
Shaun of the Dead had red.
Same one had blue.
Had blue for
At
cops.
What point did we, what color ice cream, or what point?
Green.
It was green? At what point did they actually...
It was the end. It was that wrapper. And it just said, like, pistachio.
The wrapper itself was green?
Cornetto. Yeah. No, it was green ice cream in the wrapper.
Yeah.
And it was green to kind of symbolize alien.
Because I noticed in the first two, but the third one, I just saw the wrapper. And I was like, oh, that's Cornetto ice cream. But I never saw the literal, like, green.
No, they never have it. It's just that one scene.
Yeah. It, like, literally, these guys can make these movies for the rest of their lives and just throw in a rapper wafting through the breeze, and it's like, oh, Cornetto movie.
Yeah. For your movie buffs,
in fact, they're not even Cornetto trilogy. It's just, it's one little tiny Easter. It could have been called the fence jumping trilogy.
Yeah.
Because they had the fence jump joke.
For all you movie buffs, though, in all three movies, you can look for some Cornetto ice cream in all three. It has a big, like...
It's a tiny little fact in each one of the movies that just kind of links them.
Yeah.
Like I said, there's a dozen things in each movie that can link them together. But this one in particular will go ice cream. And I like it. I like the name. I like Cornetto Trilogy.
Cornetto.
Because I didn't know that was a thing, even though I watched the other two movies a billion fucking times. Until I read the reviews of this one. They're like, Cornetto. I was like, what?
Yeah.
All right. Let's go with that. So anyway, final scene of the movie. Gary enters a pub with his robot companions of the young versions of his boys. And does the bowl...
Do you remember what they were calling the fucking robots?
Blanks.
Blanks. They were actually what they came up with when they were on their pub crawl for them.
Like, we don't serve blanks around here.
Oh, you don't, do you?
Yeah. And he does what Andy referred to earlier in the movie as the bravest move you can make is walk into a bar full of drunks and order a tap.
Yeah.
And he orders four taps. And they're like, we don't serve your kind around here. And fucking Gary pulls a sword. He's like, we're on a quest. And they charge. And that's when the movie cuts.
Which is great because, you know, I feel like he found his place in life, which was to... I guess endlessly run through the gauntlet and...
It's endlessly do the crawl with his boys from
when he was a child, yeah.
From his glory days. He
basically got his glory days back with his best friends.
If you can't tell by now, I am in love with this movie.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. I would suck Edgar Wright's cock. I love his movie so much.
Regardless of the sucking of the dick, I would definitely handshake him.
I would handjob him. He's a brilliant man.
Would you spin your hand?
For courtesy.
Give him a little of the jargons.
So,
just a little tiny bit.
Are we going to give out some doors here?
Let's give out some doors. Hey, how you feeling, Brian?
You know, I love this movie so much. I'm going to give it 8.5. I felt that it really stuck with me. Like, this is a movie that I'll always find fond in my heart. And the beginning, the end was so great. And the characters, I love all the Gary, Andy, Oliver, Peter. Everybody, and the ending was so dark that you just didn't see it coming. And I
don't think it was that dark. I found that ending more hopeful than
for an Edgar Wright movie. Come on,
it was lighter. It was darker than most Edgar Wright movies, but I found it so fucking.
But when you
found where they needed to be.
Yeah, but when you go into a movie, Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, Edgar Wright, you just basically feel that you're gonna get a laugh.
Oh, Shaun of the Dead, Ed died. He was a zombie playing
PlayStation. But at the end, they're still playing PlayStation.
But he's a zombie. He's dead.
All right. I felt...
Everyone died in that movie except for Ed, Sean, and his girlfriend.
But my last word, I'm going to pass the baton to Lou. I really did get like a tingly feeling with this movie, and it really struck me in my like cockles.
In the cockles?
In the cockles of the heart. The subcockles of the heart, yes. Okay. And I'm going to pass the baton to Lou.
But what was your rating again? I'm sorry.
8.5.
8.5. Okay, Lou?
I'm going to say 9 for sure.
Ooh, wow, that's probably the highest rating you've ever given.
I think so. You know, trying to find things negative about this movie, I struggled.
It's hard.
I'm going through that right now.
Maybe, like, I mentioned one scene where the beer was, you know, had a heavenly glow around it.
That's there was good
even,
direction.
There was even, like, a little business card that said, like, number 12, and it was still bubbling, like it just got frothy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, that would never happen, but it's such a tiny flaw. It's literally seconds of this hour and a half movie. And I'm like, is that enough to dislike anything or remove one point?
So you give it a good old 9?
I can definitely give it a 9, maybe a 9.5. Like, you know, even though like it took a while to set up the story, to get you really involved, like you really made a connection on so many levels. Absolutely. And the comedy was so well written, it didn't matter that it took half the movie to get into the robot fights.
I think you're absolutely right about that.
Like, it was funny start to finish.
Right from the get-go.
The script was fantastic.
And no one expected the world to end.
No, not at all.
And usually, like, you go into a movie, you guess the ending straight away. I didn't guess this at all. And even though the world ended, I thought it was a happy ending. You're absolutely right. Everyone got what they wanted out of
what they needed.
Their characters all ended up where they were supposed to end up.
Yeah.
I think for my rating, I think I'm going to match you 100% on the 9.
Mm-hmm.
I think this movie came out at a perfect time for me, where I think I'm of the age to really appreciate a story like this. And I'd imagine you guys may feel the same, just looking back on your past and all that fun stuff, and thinking about the time you used to get super piss-wasted and all that, and thinking those were glory days, but they're not.
No, it's totally true.
And by comparing this to some of the other comedies that I loved this summer, this is the end of being the primary.
I felt this was transcendent comedy.
This was better. This was better than This Is the End.
Like, because, This Is the End is a comedy. This is beyond a comedy.
Well, it's a great movie because they play themselves. It's kind of kitschy. It's fun. This movie had a deeper sub-level to it. It had a human story to it that spoke to me in particular. And I imagine most people around our demographic. I really thought that this was more than just a good apocalypse film. More than just a pub crawl film. I love this. I'm going to go a 9.
Yeah.
Solid 9, and I cannot wait to go see this again.
Yeah,
This is
definitely a Blu-ray for me. Like, I
think I've seen a lot of shitty movies lately, just taken because I'm dating. I think next date I go on that requires a movie, I'm gonna be like, yo, let's go see this
Machete.
One. I know this will be at least fun for me.
You know, I think that's the best tell for a date. Whether or not she likes the movie and you do.
Yes.
I've been out with a girl and she didn't like the movie and I'm like, are you fucking crazy?
Or something that happened.
And it didn't work out.
Something that happened to me once. I went to see a movie I hated and she loved it too much.
Yeah.
I think this is a good barometer.
You know, and then, you know, I was out with a girl and we're just talking and we're discussing our favorite movies and shit and I'm like, and yeah, 7 was really good. And she's like, ugh. I fell asleep. Like, I couldn't get it. I'm like, what's there to get? He's a killer.
Yeah.
He's killing.
Now, I want to...
I'm like, you didn't
we're
get
having
it?
We're having a moment here, man, where we're talking about relationships.
She was also... She was a dead fish. All right.
I want to point this out, too.
Get the hell out of here!
There you go. I want to point this out, too, that this... Especially in my current life situation, is going to be a movie that I pop on when it comes out late at night when I'm sitting home alone and I just kind of want to lie down and watch something. This is going to be that movie to me.
I got to say, even though I gave a lower ranking than you guys, it's only because Superman was so fantastic.
Don't worry about your rankings, dude.
No, but I'm just saying that I did... Like, this movie, of all the movies of the summer, really captured my heart in the characters of the film, where I could relate most to these characters, I felt.
I related to pretty much every character in this flick.
Yeah.
Boy!
In some level. My hands hurt from self-high-fiving.
You know, I want to mention one more thing. It's not with this particular movie, but our last spoilers was Wolverine.
Yes.
I saw a really
weird
like Cottonelle commercial, I think.
Oh, no.
Where the bears...
Did they steal our shit?
Well, the one bear is talking to his wife, his bear wife, and I swear...
Bear wife.
It was the Wolverine bear voice.
You gotta be kidding me.
And she's like...
That's redonk.
She's like, why are you squeezing the Cottonelle? He's like, well, it's so soft, I gotta squeeze it. And he's like...
You have to squeeze it.
You gotta watch it because there was some, like, meta-sexual innuendos.
I will be watching.
It was all in that voice.
I'm
cracking up because I'm like, Wolverine Bear.
That's what we call plagiarism.
I'm like, Wolverine Bear is talking about sex and toilet tissue.
That's unfantastic, Lou.
Hey, we came up with it first, Cottonelle. Fuck y'all.
Seriously. There's not enough toilet paper in the world to clean up that butt.
Also,
it's like rubbing peanut butter into a shag carpet.
I hate Cottonelle for outing ass balls.
Ass balls?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Those little torn paper pieces that get stuck.
We used to call those dangleberries.
Ass balls are just fine with me.
I'm a fan of both ass and balls.
Oh, no.
All right, let's call it a night, guys. Oh,
it's Wolverine, we're pouring out for you right here.
All right, it's 1:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
We are in love with this movie. I've had a few Guinnesses. I say we call it an evening. What do you guys say?
I'm going to mute myself, and Lou and Pete, bring us out.
All right, well, I didn't plan an outro, but I'll do one. Follow us.
Just do it.
On Twitter, at PIBComics, or email us at paintedblackcomics@gmail.com. You could also like us on Facebook. You can also go to paintedblackcomics.com, and we got some comic books coming out for you. Next month, 1 month from right now, we have Comic-Con New York City at the Jacob Javits Center. We will be there with Lou's book, Hand of God, and my book, The Hallowed, Issue 1, coming soon.
Yo, I pointed to Lou with the Lou's book, The Hand of God, and he gave you a nice stern head shake and pointed at you when I put the mic back on.
He covered it.
I was like, I thought you were going to be like, thank you very much, or anything, but...
Hey, man, don't ruin my flip.
I thought he was doing
I'm very sorry, Pete.
I'm in my shtick. Oh, okay, I'm back on alone, and I don't...
Hand of God!
I don't know what to say anymore, so, Plabit Black Comics, yeah, we're going to call it a night. Shut that door.
Close the door behind you?
Close the door behind you.
Perfect.
Show me.